Hello. Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Santiago, and I am an instructor at Grub Street. I'm also an author living and working in Boston, and excited to be here. I'm going to turn over to David to introduce himself.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm not sure if I can stand here with being tied to the chair, but I think it works. Welcome to BBF, or Best Buddy Forever. My name is Javed Rezaei, and I'm also an instructor at Grub Street. I also teach at Tufts University. I work on documentary films, one of them recently in New York City, 44th Academy Awards, got a few trophies. and very excited to be here. And Elizabeth and I will be sharing how today's session will go. So I'd like maybe you start.
Absolutely. So we're very happy to be here. This room is set up and hopefully conducive enough for some writing, because we're going to do a lot of writing. We're going to share a lot of prompts with you just to kind of get you going. So we've got a lot shared for you. You can explain the
Absolutely. So the idea is that once you get the prompt, you have a pen and paper, you write based on the prompt, take your time and just enjoy it. And then once we signal the time is up, you bring your writing and put them in one of these beautiful paper bags.
That's right. And so we want to hear from you. We want you to share as much as you're comfortable sharing. This is meant to be fun and just iterative and generative and all of that. We also want you to do you. Like, if you need to leave for any reason, you need to use the restroom, whatever it may be, this is meant to be an open session, and we just want to acknowledge that sometimes you need to move around. We'd love for you to take space, so please share your thoughts, and again, just have fun with it.
And also, if some of you are curious about sort of like, do we have anything to share from the world of writing and storytelling? Absolutely. We will have words of wisdom at the end. We'll share with you based on experiences. So that will be pretty much it for today, right?
That's it. That's all you need to know. Okay, we're ready to go. We're going to start with a prompt as a warm-up. Okay, so we're not going to ask you to share this, so this is just a way to get you started. You have two options. The first is, write about the qualities you think a writer must have. It's a little bit straightforward. That's a one choice. Your second option is to write about a cherished childhood food memory. Describe the dish and the emotion it evokes. So those are your two options. You can either tell us what the qualities of a writer are, or remember a childhood memory that involves food. Okay.
And we have 2 minutes for this warm-up session, and then we'll jump into more writing.
Yeah.
Sounds good?
All right, 2 minutes.
Awesome. Starting now.
All right, you have about one more minute. For those of you entering, we're just doing a quick warm up, and we'll give you another prompt so you can get started with us.
All right. Hope you had fun warming up. Now, the real fun starts. So, I want you to think with the right side of your brain, right? The left is logical, the right is creative, and just sort of having fun, and don't worry about like grammar and, you know, punctuation. The prompt here is the prompt. So write a story about the world where humans can edit human genome such that they can have designer babies. They are able to choose sex, skin color, hair, body size, etc. Now, end it with what moral and societal issues, problems, and conflicts might arise as a result. So that's your prompt. I'm gonna repeat. Yes, thank you for reading my mind. I was thinking about the same thing. So it's a quick story. You have 10 minutes, and just it's futuristic. The theme is subversion. And subversion in writing is basically like turning everything upside down, the norms and the values and the governments, everything you have. In your writing, you're creating something that goes against whatever you see is out there as the dominant value or system of way of life. So this one is a quick story that, with the use of science, of course, humans are able to basically go on the computer and choose what kind of, how their babies would look like, and all the attributes, the phenotypes and everything that comes as a result. But of course, that's a conflict, that's an issue, because of what's going to happen if everybody can choose how their babies would look like. So maybe first is the setup, the world that you're creating, and the second is the issues that come as a result. So setup and payoff. You have 10 minutes, have fun. Thank you. Three minutes to go. See if you can make the ending surprising. Alrighty, I hope you had fun writing this futuristic short story that could or could not fit on that small piece of paper. Now we're gonna start collecting your writings and put them all. You don't have to leave your seat. We'll collect them and put them in the bag. Unfortunately, of course, this is wonderful. This turnout is wonderful. So we have a lot of stories, but we're gonna choose randomly from the pocket and read maybe a few of the stories, maybe 5 to 7 of them, depending on how everything goes. So thank you so much. I hope you engage your right brain.
Okay, we're gonna read. Oh, we have more. Can put that there. I just picked one. We have time to read maybe 4 or 5, and then we'll do a second prompt for you. I'll just start reading it, and let's see where it goes. My wife and I sit staring at the harsh, cold screen, the questionnaire open to page 1. I can feel my eyes well up, and I will myself not to cry. I know we both want a better life for our child, a better world than we ever got to experience. I also know that I will never be able to live with myself if something went wrong. This was a trial study, I reminded myself. My wife and I had always wanted a house of little children running around, but was it worth it to bring a child into the world and then potentially have to end its life? After all, the success rate was only 60%. I exhaled and started to type out answers, blonde hair, brown eyes, until the words blend together into an alphabet soup. Woo!
Woo!
That was great. Let's see. Actually, where's the other bag?
Oh, there's one more.
Cool. All right, let's go with the pink bag.
Yeah, mix them up.
Okay, let's see if I'm on the right side. Okay. They chose my eyes, brown, to keep the sun out. They chose my size, strong, stocky, arms like cannons, legs like ship masts. My teeth are straight, white, but also reinforced. No need for a mouth guard. And my neck, double boned, for less chance for whiplash or concussion. Because the price the NFL would pay for the child of Tom Brady. Never mind the perfectly designed Uber quarterback I am, but my parents couldn't choose everything. And stars, I am a poet. Fingers like sausages, fingers they sculpted for touchdowns, but I can feel the way my bones were meant to grow, delicate, dexterous, folding around a pen. I am drafted into the NFL, and it is like being drafted into war, a life chosen for me not by fate, but by doctors and parents and dollars. But my true form cannot be contained in this prison of muscle. I'm a poet, and that is a choice made by me and the stars.
Woo!
Go ahead and pick.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Now from this?
You go ahead. Go ahead and pick.
Let's see if I can.
All right, let's see what. Okay. It was necessary to create this world. The most important quality that scientists had to isolate was the ability to be peaceable. Humanity had been spiraling into constant fighting within homes, neighborhoods, between citizens of the same country and across countries. There had to be a way to turn this around. It was a matter of survival. The warlike qualities had to be bred out of the human race. We became a designer species as our last hope. If the scientists didn't get this right, there could be centuries or millennia of more trouble and pain. No one could remember a time with no war, but we vowed to create a new world.
Woo!
That's great. I hope this is, has inspired you, because these are amazing.
We're keeping the author mysterious, so everybody kind of get that feeling to produce and get inspired. So, but I know you're here.
Okay. I open my computer and see on the desktop a folder to select from each morning. I wake up and check it, hoping to see the latest update in the technology. At dinner last night, my parents echoed the resounding yell of my wife demanding a new child. Yet I am nervous. Each week, there are new updates and newer versions related to citizenship options. Sorry if I'm not reading that correctly. I sigh and I opened it, and I understand that we are broke and we can't afford a new update or new releases. We are broke. We're already breaking the bank to buy good health for our baby. This is the life you've either go broke for a premium baby or you're broke after one. That's it.
Woo! One more?
I'm not sure. Good. All right, last one. Let's pick one.
Last one. There's a lot more here, so I'm going to pick one from here. Thank you so much, by the way, for reading. I'm scared of some of handwriting.
Okay. What do you mean freckles are all sold out? I scowled at my computer screen. Ted was adamant about the freckles, and I had warmed up to the plan. I hated my own, but appreciated the in vogue nature I know nowadays. Apparently everyone else did so much that the Presto Prodigy app was temporarily out of stock. We wanted the baby to arrive in June in time for my birthday, so we couldn't afford to delay. Shoot, should I let the freckles slide? Ted would be so disappointed. The online baby planning is still relatively new, and people are very excited about it. No doubts about sex, no concerns about which parent the baby will resemble, no risk of chromosomal abnormalities.
Mm. Woo!
I'm gonna put these in here. So these are great.
This was wonderful. Thank you so much, everybody, for participating. You know, in the storytelling, surprise is one of the good elements to use. So here's a little bit of surprise right here. We're going to practice. So if your story was read, please stand up.
Woo!
Please give a round of applause to all our writers. And thank you, Elizabeth, for reading. I didn't bring my glasses, so I. But a round of applause to Elizabeth as well, please, for reading.
Yeah, that was easy. You did the hard work, right? But of course, now I've got to shake things up a little bit. I'm going to add some tension. And when we think of tension, at least when I think of tension in writing, I always start with the characters and who they are and what's going on in their life. And what tension they're bringing as just living on this earth. So my question's a little bit different, but it's about a person. So this next writing activity, you have, we'll say, roughly 5 to 8 minutes for it. We'll see how it goes. But I want you to create a character who is underestimated and does something about it. So tell us the story of that character and what happened to them and what they did to do something different. And Isan, thank you for passing out more cards. Sure. So imagine a character who has been underestimated. It can be in any context, but just they've been underestimated, and now they're doing something about it. What that thing is that they're doing is up to you. but I want you to take them from being underestimated to having some agency. Does that make sense? Any questions? All right, 5 to 8 minutes. We'll say 8 minutes, and then we'll do the same round where you'll share. All right, you can finish your last thought, sentence, idea. We'll collect if you'd like to hopefully get yours picked so it can be read. So two very different questions. Let's see what this this next one brings. Oh, Isan. You know, that paper is noticeable. I'm going to have to pick that. I went for cards last time. I'm going to have to go for paper.
Okay, I see. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm mixing this well, and I have the pleasure of choosing the next story. So here we go.
Okay, let's do it. All right, I've always been shy. I always know the answers in class, but never speak. But today, I've decided to take over the school. I'll set the groups against each other and play on their mutual resentment. I am the only one who can protect you against them, I'll say. When the school administrators try to take away my right to speak, I'll form an insurrection and urge hanging them. If I am expelled, great, I'll say. See now, see how we are mistreated? I shall rule the world.
All right. Round of applause to the author.
I did the best I could with reading that, so I kind of butchered a couple words. Sorry about that.
Okay. It's a new bag, I believe.
I promised to pick this one.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. The last class before graduation, Ilrendel had never seen such a talented group of young wizards. One by one, they came and did a mock duel with him, disarming and then putting a harmless charm spell on him. All talented, except for Jonas, the farmer's son. He sighed as Jonas came up to the stage. Surprisingly, Jonas was able to take the wand out of his hand. A sudden fear crept over Irendel as his body became paralyzed. This wasn't supposed to happen. With a laugh, Jonas snapped Ilrendel's wand in half. A red light seemed to fill the room, a death spell. Jonas mockingly said, "You mocked me and underestimated me for the last time." Irendel woke up in a cold sweat, a dream or vision warning of the future if he didn't change things. These are great. These are very cathartic, I can tell. Like they. okay, which one?
So this one? We're moving on to the next story. Here it is.
Okay, thank you. Just want to make sure. Okay. The last superlative listed in Michael's yearbook was dedicated to him, most likely to fail. Underneath the bold black letters was a photo of him, awkward, curly hair, oily skin, braces. Michael closed the yearbook and placed it back on his desk. He could still hear the laughter of all the other kids in the room, the humiliation under his skin, dug under his skin. Still, 20 years later, he could feel himself feeling small under their grins and demeaning eyes. Michael shook his head and grabbed himself and his glasses, a glass of water from the kitchen. He spilled his drink and went back to his laptop. Stocks are up, he said as he stared at the screen. Good.
All right,
we think one more.
One more? Okay.
Let's do one more.
Sure. Do you want
to? okay. I'm enjoying this. All right. Life was hard. Every day he'd have to experience the same embarrassment. Aunties squeezing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Squeezing his chubby cheeks, pooping into his diaper. He knew he had to use the toilet, for God's sakes. Hell, technically, he'd only read about it when his parents fell asleep. But he understood the mechanics. Being fed milk day in and day out, he wanted to try what was known as chocolate. Even though it looked like poop a little bit, why wouldn't they have never feed him that? Plus, he hated the way their voices came out as goo goo gaga. When he spoke with his fellow colleagues, they had incredibly nuanced conversations, but all the adults heard it as simple babbling. One day, he had enough. As the CEO and co-founder of Babies United Corporation, he worked on developing corporate guidelines for babies' rights. On October 13, 2023, Buck published its expose, the Baby Manifesto. Its first tenet, stop squeezing my cheeks. All right. And the same, if I read your story, please stand. I want to give you a round of applause.
The authors.
Thank you.
All right, so I hope you're having fun so far. If you do, make a little noise. Awesome. So at this part of the program, we're going to share like some of, you know, thoughts of our writing journey, share some words of wisdom with you, 5-6 minutes, and then we will have a little time to do a Q&A. So a Q&A will just take like 2 or 3 questions, but that's our time. So Elizabeth, would you like to start?
Sure. I love talking about writing and my journey. I just share this because I'm someone who didn't write for a very long time, and then more recently started really diving deep into creative writing, and my debut novel came out in May, which was very exciting. Woo! Yes. And sort of, you know, a dream come true, but also something that I just sort of had in the back of my mind for many years that I wanted to do. And so I actually, again, took my time and did it. So all I would say, I bring that up because many of us always think that if we hadn't published something or if, you know, we're not writing, that we're not writers and that that dream will never be fulfilled. And that wasn't the case for me. So my advice and to all of you is just to keep writing. Write what's in your heart. Write that story that maybe still lives within you that hasn't seen the light of day. I say continue because there's an audience for it. And just as there was an audience for my book and it was published, there'll be one for you, whatever you want to do with that, your work. So that's my first bit of advice.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. So I'm a story consultant, and I help people make a film, write novels and memoirs for film, including National Geographic, Time, MSNBC, and the last project was with WhatsApp. They had a little story in form of a commercial, but real story. It's very interesting. So from over 10 years of my experience, the most important thing in terms of storytelling that I've learned is what I'm going to share with you. And that is the concept of pity, fear, catharsis. And as some of you might know that, that comes from Aristotle, you know, a little guy who wrote a lot of things back in the day, like more than 1,000 years ago. This is from Aristotle's Poetics. The idea of pity, fear, catharsis, in that order, you can't change the order, is not for the hero of your story, it's not for the writer of the story, it's for audiences. So when you write a story, think in these three forms. This is the same as beginning, middle, and end, pity, fear, catharsis, act one, act two, act three, pity, fear, catharsis. So kind of like the same thing, but the idea is this, basically. When you make a story, think about your audiences and think about how they feel, how every section makes your audiences feel. And based on thousands of years of experience, human experience, we are hardwired humans to listen to a story. And there is a particular order in storytelling that stays with us for a long time and make your story memorable. And again, that's pity, fear, catharsis. So when you're writing your story, you want to make sure that your readers or viewers feel what's called pity for your hero. And this pity is not just sort of like, it can be pity as well, but it's just connection. It's a relatability. So you can put your hero in an unjust world, for example. Something wrong happens to them that they didn't deserve. And that's how audiences connect with them. Oh my God, that's not right. As soon as you have done that, there's chemicals in your bloodstream, in the readers, they connect with the author. Another way is some principles, disciplines. If somebody's very good at something, for example, a plumber, very good at it, honest about it, and if you show that plumber worked really hard, honestly, and there was an opportunity for him or her to steal, but didn't, people connect, your audiences connect with that. So that is a pity. In the pity realm, space, what happens is your readers will care. That's the most important thing in the beginning of a story, that your audiences should care for your protagonist. So once that happens, it's by design, once that happens, you're going to put your protagonist or your hero in danger. That's the second part. That's the fear part. So what happens is, now that the audiences know the hero and have fallen in love with the hero, now the hero is in danger, what happens? Of course, you root for them, you care for them, you want them out of that danger. You're like, no, this is not going to happen to this protagonist that I know, this guy, whatever the name is, Scout. That nothing should harmful should happen to the protagonist. So in second act, which is the middle of the story, and it's a little longer, your audiences are connected because the hero is in danger. And then the last part is catharsis. And catharsis is when you get your hero, who the audiences know, who was in danger and audiences rooted for them, out of danger. And they're like, oh, I'm glad this happened. I'm glad she is out. So that creates another range of chemicals in your bloodstream, mostly dopamine, and that satisfaction, that meaningful closure is what is catharsis. So pity, fear, catharsis. Thank you.
Any thoughts, questions from you? We'd love to open this up and have a discussion about. Oh, look at that. Okay.
Oh, nice.
Okay, yes, sir. Yes. Yeah, thank you for that question. I'll try to be brief, but it was a long and drawn out. But when I was younger, I went to school for creative writing, and I thought I wanted to pursue that. I had a couple really not so great experiences. So I had sold a middle grade novel that got shelved, and I lost the copyright. So it just sort of left a bad taste in my mouth, let's put it that way. And so I kind of put my writing desires or creative writing to the side for a long time. And then I channeled that into a doctoral program. I channeled that into writing research and discovered that I was terrible at writing research. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And I started to write a story that put the research that I was doing in a context of real people, in a community, in a neighborhood, focusing on my own history, because I was discovering, as a Puerto Rican woman, who the Taino people, the native people of Puerto Rico are, and I wanted to bring that. That was more where my heart was, and that inspired me, actually going on this journey of doctoral work inspired me to bring the creativity back into my life. And I'm glad I did, because I wrote that story and it had an audience. So I encourage everyone to just listen to that voice and write that story. Okay.
Question over there.
I know there's a question, and I can't keep track, and I'm sorry, but okay.
Hi, first of all, thank you so much for this. It was very interesting and interactive. My question for you is, how do you shift from writing in your own language, which is not English, like my first language, to an English writing? Like, sometimes I try to translate exactly the way how I feel it, but sometimes it turns out it's not the way I want to present it to the world. So I would love an advice in this.
Okay, I can take that because my native language, my mother tongue, is Farsi, and that's spoken in Afghanistan as well, in addition to Iran. And I grew up in Afghanistan until age 16 and then got out. But that's an interesting question. Very good. So what has worked for me is that when I was starting writing, people were telling me, write it in Farsi, write it in your own language, because, you know, you can express and then somebody would translate. Now, at the same time, I was translating, a professional translator myself. I was like, no, I'm not going to write it in Farsi and then translate it. And then who's the translator? The translator is myself, because nobody can satisfy that. So why not jump right into English? So it, for me, actually, get straight. If that's the book you want to write, your audience is English speakers, jump into it. Don't worry about it. You will figure it out. So writing is, of course, also improving your comprehension and writing and expression in English. So what happens is that it will work out just fine for like 90% of the time. There are some nuances that you cannot, as a speaker of a, you know, second language originally, that you can express. So the trick is this. I write everything else that works, but there's some cultural or some kind of nuances that I cannot put in English. So what I do is I switch my head and I think in Farsi. So I say it in Farsi, and then I translate that part. And then once I translate that part, put it like a little, you know, it's like maybe 2-3 sentences in the larger context, and then rewrite, and then go a few times so that it's as polished and fluent as the rest of the work, which I have written in English. So that's one way to go. Yep. You're welcome.
I'm not sure where the microphone is.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I had a question about your writing process and structure, and it was just curious from each of you. You know, you were just sharing about, you know, pity, fear, and catharsis, and there's a bunch of different, like, writing structures you can apply. I was just curious from each of you, at what point or a stage in your writing process do you layer structure in? Is that something that you do out of the gate? Mm. Or do you just kind of creatively brain dump and get everything kind of raw and sloppy on a page and then stick it back in? I'm just curious how you each approach that.
I do a little bit of both now. So the first novel I wrote was very much a brain dump. I'm just getting the feel of it. I'm getting all the things out that I wanted to say. And then I went back in and added structure, and to be honest, that was really hard. And so now, having gone through that process, I do something that's in between, where I still give myself the freedom to put whatever I'm feeling and what I want onto a page, but I'm trying to stay within a structure that makes sense. So I know the act one, act two, act three, you know, I know this belongs here, and this is going to be the end part, or that sort of thing. So it helps so that you're not losing anything in that process.
And I'll just add that I also actually put act one, act two, act three. My own favorite language is pity, fear, catharsis. Mm-hmm. That's the only structure I think about. And there's inciting incident, and there's a climax, and like all is lost in middle. But most important is three things that engages readers' feelings. So once I have that, which is easy, you know, you just type it act one, act two, act three. Within each, I just think in terms of scenes. That's something that will save you big time. Just visually, scene and engage readers. The language should be sort of like evocative, and it should engage the reader's sensory kind of like senses. So you should have some sensory details. And it's very easy to remember. Just like we have five senses, when you write, engage those five senses. What is it that the reader sees? So like colors, boxes, architecture, and then how does the space smell? Like one person walked by and it smelled like really caught my attention. The reader feels that. And then something tastes in a certain way. Something feels in a certain way. So if you engage the five senses of humans, and I just think in scenes, and scenes has just like a story, a beginning, middle, and end. That will save you big time.
We have time for one more. That gentleman in the back has. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. Oh, wow, there's a lot. hi. I have a question specifically for Javed. You do the you teach a course on storytelling at Tufts, and one of the things I happen to notice within your methodology, this kind of pity, fear, catharsis, is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that if it works really well for creative writing. But for people like me, like I'm a journalist, I'm a reporter, it becomes kind of difficult to incorporate that type of model in a medium that is so strict within facts, in kind of just doing data and just straight what happened. How is it possible for people who do nonfiction writing to incorporate, you know, the pity, fear, catharsis? Is it possible?
That's a great question. We have 1 minute, so I'm going to answer that, and we will wrap up. So basically, the answer is yes, and there's the reason. When you put together a nonfiction story, a report about people, and you have this concept in your head, there will be moments, information, and details that you think is going to fit in the pity part first. So you're not creating anything. You're not telling lies if you're doing nonfiction. But for example, if you're writing a memoir, there are moments that actually fits in the category of fear, in the category of catharsis, in the category of pity. So basically what I'm saying is that do as much as you can without changing the truth. The truth is your friend. But polishing it, because writing is an art, that helps it a lot. So... thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think we have to wrap up, unfortunately. If we have time to stay after, we can answer questions one-on-one, but we need to let the room go. But thank you so much for your
time. Thank you so much for stopping by.